We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Well, we're going to call this a segment with Ian Eagle. And Ian, are you there?
I'm here, Steve. It's going to happen. This is real.
Well, I'm glad it's happening. It's been way too long. And I had the idea because I got a Christmas card from you and your family, and that was great. And I didn't send you back a Christmas card, so I thought I would talk about the Nets last night and give you a lot of credit for how you were able to explain what was going on, you and Spanarkle, and how you were able to explain the very end of that second overtime with the clock. It was 3.4, then it was 1.7, and then it was 1.6. And I thought right away, without any confusion from you guys at all, you were able to explain it in no uncertain terms. Amazing job on your part.
Well, a few things. First of all, the holiday card. That's an old list. I have no idea how your name is still on it. So we're going to need to update that. Secondly, I went to journalism school, Steve. This is what I've been trained to do. These kind of heavy situations with everything flying and just deciphering in the moment what's the most important part of the story. That was, I've been doing this 25 years, play-by-play in the NBA.
That's a long time.
I know, that's hard to believe.
Yes.
That's among the strangest sequences I've ever seen in an NBA game. What happened at the end of regulation, spilling over into overtime, and then in double overtime. Really one of the strangest, wackiest games that I've seen in quite some time.
Well, you know, and I thought, as all kidding aside, thoroughly entertaining. And the Nets here, they're playing some good basketball. Well, they're winning. It's a little bit on the, listen, it reminds me, I was saying earlier in the program, it reminds me a little bit of the Knickerbockers, because if the Knickerbockers aren't on, you can watch the Nets and see some of the same flaws and some of the same imperfections. But there's a difference in the two teams, and that is that the Nets are so much better, and you're broadcasting every one of their TV games to let us all see that.
Yeah, they're really entertaining. They're very competitive. Even during the eight-game losing streak, these were close games. There were a lot of fourth-quarter gaffes, a lot of the learning process happening before your eyes. And now those situations are turning into wins. They play really hard. And I know that should be a staple. That should be the standard in professional sports. But it's not always the case. And I think in the NBA, if that's the first thing on your blackboard, you're going to find a way to win games, and they compete at a high level. This is not a team that's dominated by one player. It's truly a group effort. It is contagious because now you have good vibes in this locker room. There's chemistry developing. Kenny Atkinson has really done a terrific job of instilling confidence and not allowing their spirit to be defeated during that eight-game losing streak. They've bounced back. They've won 9 of their last 10 games, and all of a sudden, they're in the mix. They're in the conversation. When you start looking at the standings in the Eastern Conference, they're right there. They're a half game, a game out, a game and a half out of the sixth place in the East. So this is a good sign for a team that is still trying to open some eyes around the NBA and convince people that this is a team that you may want to flip on every now and again to see a competitive and gritty bunch.
And here's, you mentioned about Atkinson, and certainly the passion is there. He's all over the place on the sidelines, and he's alive. He's got a pulse, and he gets into it. And we saw him get ejected the other night.
Yep.
The difficulty would be because my operative word, Ian, is developing. We don't say that the Knicks, for the sake of conversation here, and the Nets are losing teams. We say they're developing because they're so young. Talk to me a little bit, if you can, about the challenges a coach like Atkinson would have trying to get a young team to play together as one, and how difficult that can be.
Yeah, I think Sean Marks, when he took the job as the general manager, knew exactly what he was signing up for, and he brought in a coach that truly values that word. And you could throw it out there and talk about developing, but this is something they're truly committed to. And even guys that have moved on to other teams, I think they take some pride in knowing that the player got better during his stint with the Nets. Brook Lopez now is flourishing in Milwaukee. Kenny Atkinson was the one that gave him the green light, that told him, you can be a three-point shooter. That's what we need you to be in this offense. And now that's what Brook is doing in Milwaukee, and the Bucks are one of the more entertaining teams in the Eastern Conference. And I think the Nets take some pride in that. They want people around the NBA to discuss that, to bring that up. They want that to be an operative word when their culture pops up in conversation. And that's Kenny's background. That's what he did with Houston way back when. He did it with the Knicks under Mike D'Antoni. He did it with the Hawks under Mike Budenholzer. So that's really where he made his bones. And I think that's why he's ascended to this position. That's what Sean Marks wanted. He knew in this rebuild there were going to be a bunch of young players. And the only way to attack it with young talent is to let them know ahead of time, you're going to improve. You want to make money. You want to get better. I think there's this misnomer that players don't want to be coached. They do. If it indicates that they will improve, evolve, and then get a bigger contract, I think they're very open to the idea of coaching and developing as a player.
Yeah, and yes, and it shows a little bit. You can see, even though there may be, I mean, obviously, we're not talking elite team in the Eastern Conference. We're not talking, say, Toronto or Boston, and look at Philadelphia, Ian. You know, after all the so-called tanking,
right.
I mean these three teams. But you can see at least the effort is there. See, if the wins aren't there all the time, it is effort, it is energy. You want the you want to see with your Nets, you want to see inbounding the basketball during crunch time at the end of the fourth quarter when the game is on the line. You don't want to see a violation with the foot on the line or the foot out of bounds. We saw that when you were losing those eight games in a row. Not smart basketball, and you could see the frustration that a guy like Atkinson is going to have, not only on the sidelines, but in the post-game press conference as well, because what he wants and what the fans want, what the players want, is to win. But to win, you have to play some smart basketball, and it's a learning process.
It is. And, Steve, I think they've been able to blend some of the veterans in, and not just as cheerleaders on the sideline. Damari Carroll, Ed Davis, and Jared Dudley all have prominent roles as part of the bench unit. And I think we sometimes underestimate what that means when a veteran can not only say, hey, young fella, this is what you need to do, but when he can go out there and show him with his effort, with a savviness, that validates things. And so those three players that have played an integral role during this 10-game stretch, I believe that's helped cement what Kenny Atkinson has been trying to teach. He's got a really good staff, and there's a strong dynamic. He's got a good way with players. He obviously is a positive guy, but he's also honest. And he'll tell a guy to his face that he made a mistake, and he'll coach him up, he'll sit him down, and then he'll tap him on the backside and send him back into the game. So there's a nice give and take right now between this coaching staff and this young group with a few veterans sprinkled in, and now you're starting to see results.
Yeah, sure. He wants his players to earn their minutes. He wants their players to earn their time on the floor. Ian, you know, I can understand why it's easy for you to do basketball play-by-play, as gifted as you are, and it's easy for me to say that. But it's easy for me to see how you can do with the basketball play-by-play and football play-by-play because both sports have turnovers. How about that?
Yeah, that's the common thread. When I go
exactly.
into a game, I just think to myself, if they turn it over, I'll be fine. I know how to call turnovers. Obviously, 25 years now doing the NBA, Stephen, I don't want to make you feel ancient because...
I am, when though.
I know. I'm just confirming what people know. When I was an intern at WFAN 1989, and one of my shifts was working with Captain Midnight and screening calls overnight. And at the time, I want to say it was Al McCandless that might have been producing, and then it morphed into Bill Rodman and Ed Scazzeri
yes.
and all the fine people that you worked with. But that was the building block for me in getting into this crazy business. So the basketball is 25 years. The football is 21 years at CBS
wow.
doing both basketball and football. So now it's just ingrained in my head that basically starting mid-October now with the NBA, that it's going to be a crazy schedule, and I still love it. I enjoy it. I enjoy the travel. I enjoy running around and bopping around from game to game, heading to Charlotte tomorrow, then heading to Foxborough mm-hmm. on Saturday morning for the Jets and the Patriots. It's a fun time of year.
Yeah, well, you've earned all these years. I mean, obviously, and we knew it here. I mean, where we could see and experience the talent that you had, that you still have, and that you will probably always have, because you're just gifted. You have to have a gifted aptitude. You have it. It sounds kind of Pollyannish. Maybe I'm embarrassing you a little bit by saying all these very nice things, but you've earned it. Yeah, and it isn't like you're there by accident. You're a gifted play-by-play guy, period, and that's all there is to it. Let's talk for a couple of moments before we let you go. The Jets with Sam Darnold. He's the franchise, Ian.
I'm sorry, what's your first name again? I completely lost my place. My aptitude has completely escaped me. Sam Darnold had a certain presence about him working the preseason games and doing these production meetings. You never quite know what you're going to get. And you sit down with a 21-year-old, literally younger than my son, which is hard to wrap my brain around, about 6 months younger than my son. And you sit down for the production meeting, and you expect someone to be maybe a little shy and reserved. And what I found was a thoughtful young guy that had a pretty good handle on how to deal with all this. Being a quarterback, New York City, rookie in the NFL. So there was a presence there, and I didn't know how it would translate during the regular season, and it hasn't been smooth sailing. It's hard. It's a hard job mm-hmm. being a quarterback in the NFL. You talk about needing a certain... mental capacity, and then the physical aspect of it, and all of that wrapped up into every week somebody trying to knock your head off. And while he's taken his lumps, the best thing to come out of this Jets season here in week 17 is that you've seen not just flashes, but sustained excellence where this can now transfer over to year two and year three. But the biggest key, as we know, with the Jets will be who's coaching him,
well,
who's guiding him.
Yep.
And that's going to be the million-dollar question moving forward. Who are the Jets comfortable with in now taking over these roles at a very important time in Sam Darnold's career, these early years where you are laying the foundation for what they hope to be a big-time career with multiple playoff appearances and dare I say, down the road, Jet fans can dream, a Super Bowl. This is the ultimate prize, and to get there, you better have a quarterback that you believe in. He's 21 years old. Mm-hmm. They believe in him.
Ian, let me ask you this because time is short, and so are the two of us.
Yes, that's true.
Not who you think they are going to hire as the new head coach. Who would you like to see become the new head coach of the Jets?
Yeah, it's such a tough decision to make because of where this team is. And I think Mike McCarthy has the experience. The questions with Mike will be New York City. and whether or not he can deal with the day-to-day grind. You come from Green Bay, where you have a couple of beat reporters, and the city is very different. They're Packers Central all the time. The Jets trying to find their piece in the New York sports landscape, and their relevance day-to-day is important to the franchise and important for advertising dollars and season ticket holders and all of that. So I'm curious if that's going to be a good fit, but he seems to have the type of resume that, you would look at, someone that's worked with a big-time quarterback, that has gone to a Super Bowl, has seen the development and evolution of a team that turned into a champion. Mm-hmm. That probably is the name that will pop up quite a bit. Whether or not that's a square peg going into a round hole, I'm not sure.
All right, let me, before I let you go, Ian, I can't thank you enough, you know that. Eli Manning quarterbacking the Giants to start 2019 in September.
If you would have asked me 6 weeks ago, my answer would have been a fairly immediate no. Mm-hmm. But you read the tea leaves now, mm-hmm. and I don't know if the Giants took a look at who's going to be in the draft and said to themselves, well, this is not the year. So why do you reach for someone and make that kind of commitment if you don't believe in the player? Could there be a stopgap player? Yeah, there are going to be quarterbacks available. Joe Flacco is going to be available. Ryan Tannehill is going to be available. Nick Foles is going to be available. Teddy Bridgewater may be available based on what New Orleans wants to do. So there are going to be quarterbacks that they could form a relationship with and feel pretty good about for 2019. But if they're comfortable with Eli Manning and they think they can go another year and wait for the quarterback that they believe in for the 2020 draft, I don't see that out of the realm of possibility. That could be very realistic for the Giants' thought process right now.
Okay. Ian, I can't thank you enough for the time. We're out of time. Take care of yourself. Have the happy new year for you and your family. The whole thing, Ian.
Steve, you're the best. We'll talk again soon, my friend.
I hope so. Thanks, Ian, a lot. And thank you all for listening and calling. We thank the guys on the other side of the glass.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.